listening to the Jack Wagon Podcast.
Oh, good for you!
Featuring Chad Roper and Drew Cobb from Cool 94's Rope and Drew in the Morning.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. You know, morons.
Oh.
This podcast is unsuitable for small children and girly soy boys.
They whine about anything. You pull down their pants and you spank their ass.
What is these animals?
Them ones that eat snakes, huh?
Let's get it all!
Welcome to the Jack Wagon Podcast.
Do you even know the name of the podcast?
The Jackass Wagon.
Close enough. Matter of fact,
this is episode number 4 of the Jackass Wagon.
The Jackass Wagon Podcast, man.
Chad Roper.
The whack-ass jackasses.
I saw the jackass wagon, and I was like, he surely meant Jackass Wagon.
I'm Chad Roper. That's Drew Cobb, and you are?
Suzanne Keyes.
Okay. So, we had this conversation a couple of weeks back. We're hanging out at Dora's Pool, and I was kind of interested in your maiden name, Caravallis. So, close. You are... Well, how do you say it?
Caravella.
Caravella.
No, okay. It's Caravelle.
Yeah.
Oh, so, see, Drew.
So, kind of talk about...
Bellissima.
Yeah. There it is. Yeah.
It's coming out.
Okay. Uh-huh.
That's all the Italian I know, by the way.
So, just how Italian... are you?
I'm 50%.
50%.
Yeah. Okay. You want to know how Italian I am?
Yeah.
My grandmother's name, are you ready? Was Restituta Cianfrano. Except
that so
when
much.
She got, did that do something?
It just made me feel like I need to be wearing a stignet right here.
On the day of my daughter's wedding.
But.
I called it a stignet. It's actually a signet, but forget about it.
However. When she and her aunt got off the boat, she was 14. They couldn't speak any English. And the people at Ellis Island were very frustrated and couldn't understand them. And so they took away her name and they named her Jane Comfort.
We tend to really do that a lot in America.
God like, bless white people.
So I came across some...
It's horrible.
Yeah. I actually came across some really cool statistics today. Something like 2/3 of the world or something have English as a second language, and not even that many people have English as a first language. Like more people wow. have English as a second language yeah. than people have English language. As a first language. I found that pretty fascinating.
So on my mom's side, so my great grandmother, she was from Sicily, and my great grandfather.
Oh, pause. That's not Italian.
I know it's Sicilian. It's close okay. enough. They still
they used to be separate.
They still eat pasta.
They speak the language of the motherland.
Us Italians are very particular. If somebody's like, oh, my grandparents are Italian. They're from Sicily. Or you go, what part? And they're like, they're from Sicily. And us Italians go, no.
Like, you have to be Sicilian in order to get into the mob, right? Like, that's
I'm
where you're...
I'm pretty certain.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's one of the qualifications.
Are you actually in the Witness Protection Program and this is your new identity?
No,
this is not her real name. This is...
However, I did have... Apparently, the legend is that in the 30s, Anthony was 18 and never heard from again.
Oh, wow, man. I've got some outlaw heritage as well, which I've done. Have you done Ancestry DNA, I'm assuming?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you about to tell us that you, in fact, are related to Jesse James?
No. Chad, you don't need to spill any of the details because you've actually seen my DNA stuff in one or more fashions.
Part of the news.
Oh, wow.
But your DNA is actually part of the news.
It runs extremely deep, and it crisscrosses a few times, if you know what I'm saying, coming from Kentucky.
So your family tree is more like a Celtic knot where it just kind of...
Well, my family history actually does go back pretty far. The only people that really kept track of it, though, was my mom's side, and that's the Irish side. I am, 25% Irish, 50%
oh, yeah,
Welsh,
that's right.
And then the rest mixed like, between French and other
oh, yeah,
German,
but you're a little Viking,
yeah,
though.
A like, little Viking? Bit, yeah, Nordic, German, and Baltic area. That's like the smaller parts of my DNA. Anyways, yeah. But I found out that my great-great-grandfather, this story always has been told, that he like got stowed away on like a ship or something. He wasn't supposed to come here. He was escaping, not because of a famine, because he was in trouble and that's how he got here. But I guess he like hit on a ship or something. I guess that turned out to be true. Like usually when they're like, oh, my great grandmother was a Cherokee princess, it's a 100% lie. So I'd never believe the story, but after the ancestry DNA stuff.
Well, I guess I'm not
going
to talk about my great-great-grandmother.
Yeah.
So, no, seriously. Her last name, Gumino.
Gumino.
Ooh. Yeah. Now, I've heard the Hispanic Gamino, and then there's the Gambino family. Mm-hmm. Back to the mob.
Mm-hmm. So you are a pharmacist. Indeed. This is really why I wanted you to come in, is because I have a real big aversion to big pharma.
Me too.
Yeah. And it's ironic that you do, because you are one of the only pharmacists in the area. And so where does that come from? Where does that disdain for the whole big pharma thing come from, when the nature of your business is basically selling drugs? Yeah.
So that's really a good question. So I've been a pharmacist for 20 years. And
it's okay, you're around friends here, Beatrice. Here in a minute, we can go ahead and get the dominoes out and have a mimosa.
Ovaltine, please.
So I've been a pharmacist for about 24, 25 years. And first of all, let me just say this. Big Pharma owns our medical schools and our pharmacy schools.
Yeah.
They are the ones that fund all of it. And so it's no wonder that we are trained the way we're trained. Traditionally trained is what we call it. Allopathic medicine, Western medicine, traditionally trained. And I bought into it. I was going to change the world with a few pills. And I did that for a long time. My professional career, if you kind of like scan over it, I look like a kid with ADD. No disrespect, but
you assume that I have ADD.
I'm just saying, no disrespect.
Come on.
But I mean, I literally have done retail, nursing home consulting, management, compounding. I was a prior authorization pharmacist for an insurance company. I mean,
oh my gosh,
I have hospital. I did chemo, all sorts of stuff until I finally landed on where I am now. But you know, for those first probably 18 years, I just did what I was trained to do, which was count really fast by fives. And it wasn't until I opened my own pharmacy about 10 years ago that I started questioning, why do you have that symptom? Because that shouldn't happen. How it all started really is I had a patient come in on thyroid, and she was just in casual conversation. She was talking about how she still was having symptoms of low thyroid. And I was like, that's weird, because I was trained that if you take the thyroid pill, that you are going to be 100%.
See, I don't agree with that, which I have high thyroid, though, the opposite or whatever. But when I tried taking the medicine, like, it made me feel like I was having a heart attack. It made my heart flutter. Exactly. I couldn't take it. I felt like I was going to die.
Was that before you got diagnosed?
No, it was after. Like, I didn't get the medicine until after I was diagnosed, which hypothyroidism, which is the overactive, right?
No, hyper.
Okay, hyper, whatever the overactive one is, hyper. That runs in my family really bad. Like, my grandmother is like 75 years old, and she is like skinnier than you. Like, I just fluctuate weight like 60 pounds back and forth. And I never change my diet or exercise, really.
I am no medical doctor. I am a doctor of pharmacy. I am no medical doctor. Have they mentioned Graves' disease to you?
I've never heard of that in my life. I haven't been to a doctor, though, since I was like 26 because of insurance reasons and stuff. You know this, though, because I've came to you for like ointments and stuff for back pain and whatnot.
Really? So you just gave me a whole picture, and you just explained that it's in your family.
Yeah.
It's automatically. Well, first of all, when you said you had hyper, usually hyper is associated with Graves' disease.
Okay.
And that's an autoimmune disease.
Okay.
And that's a genetic hiccup. And that's where your ancestry is coming from.
See, I've been riddled with autoimmune stuff my whole life. And so many autoimmune diseases are just so frustrating in the first place, because 99.9% of them have no cure. Half of them don't even have treatment. Let's just throw steroids at it. No, that's what I've been told my whole life.
You
know what I'm saying? Like,
this is perfect.
And when you don't have insurance, or you don't have good insurance, you don't have the money to go through 27 rounds of testing for them to maybe or maybe not come up with one of five different autoimmune diseases. It could be. So I get hemorrhoids real bad constantly. I always have them. I'm always starving. I can eat and eat and eat, and I'm never full. Yes, I do smoke a lot of weed, but it's legal, and it's the only thing that's ever really helped me. compared to like pharmaceutical stuff, except for your topicals, your stuff. Yeah, you're all natural.
So, but the thing is with you though, you, even though probably seeing how much money people are spending on this pill for this symptom and all the money on this pill for this stuff, for you, it was more, well, you're taking all the pills.
Why is it not working?
You still have the symptoms.
Right. And that's exactly how it started. And then when those kind of questions with that one patient, I saw the engagement. I mean,
like what do you mean by engagement?
Well, first of all, no pharmacist had ever asked her those questions. I'm like, you mean no one has ever asked you, how are you feeling on the medicine that's I'm giving you that's treating the disease?
That seems like a thing that should be asked.
No, it should be. But historically, and when I say my job, I don't mean mine. I mean my general. My job as a pharmacist really is to go take it on an empty stomach. And I'll put it on autofill so that I can make sure that I get your copay every month. I mean, so that you can make sure that you have your medicine every month.
You know what a doctor has never asked me, Suzanne? What do you eat?
That's the first thing. Yeah. That's the very first thing I have.
Like, that seems like something very important.
I thought you were so going for the, like, are you free Friday night? You've probably never been asked that by a doctor either.
I've been asked much worse by you, I promise.
But you know what? That's the thing, is that doctors, in their defense, are not, I think now they possibly in med school get one or two classes on pharmaceuticals. And when I was in school, they got no nutrition.
Right.
None.
Isn't it true that most doctors, they spend more time as it relates to the study of medications, how the individual medication works, and then how many contradictions that they can avoid? Like, contradictions is a big study for those guys. I know this because they can't prescribe this, that, and the other thing, and then add that to it without something.
No, that's what I'm here
documentedly
for.
Bad.
No,
happens,
unfortunately,
right?
Doctors don't get trained in a lot of that. They get just the top, and so they. Why pharmacists aren't a bigger player on the team, I don't know, because what you're talking about is the contraindications of multiple medications.
Okay, contraindications.
Contraindications are things that. You shouldn't take that because of whatever. Then drug-drug interactions are what you're talking about when you keep piling on drugs. That's what our job is. That's when we call the doctor and go, doc, you just prescribed penicillin and the patient's telling me that they've got a penicillin allergy. And the patient is assuring me, no, my doctor knows that. You don't have to worry about my allergies. And I'm like, really? Because he just prescribed it.
So you're talking to this patient and they're going, okay, so I'm taking all the drugs for the thyroid stuff. I'm not doing this. So fast forward to like the curiosity that builds after you're like diving into this gal. Did you start looking into schools that related?
No, not for 18 months. I did it all on my own because I didn't know there was any additional training. I didn't know what I was diving into. I just, when I saw her engagement that she was like, she actually was like, oh, you're going to really have a conversation with me about what we're doing here and more than take it on an empty stomach. And I said, well, by the way, did you happen to know that what you're taking is actually an inactive form of thyroid? It does nothing. It's a storage hormone and your body has to convert it to the active form. And maybe that's why you're still having symptoms. That's all I had to say. And then all of a sudden we launched into a 30-minute Q&A because she's like, what? And I'm like, well, yeah, if you don't have enough iron or selenium, then you're not going to convert the inactive to the active form. And maybe that's why you're still having symptoms. And then I'd talk about her gut and I'd go, well, you know, 20% of that conversion happens in your gut. So what's going on in your gut? Do you have any bloating? Do you have any, you know, IBS or do you have cramping or anything like that? And
absolutely.
It just launches into it. Well, so now I've just got an entire picture of what's happening. And so at that moment, I knew that there had to be a link somewhere. So I just tabled the conversation, have a good day, Mrs. Smith. And that's where it started. And then after work, I went back in the office and just started honestly Googling and going, does this symptom have anything to do with that? Oh, it does. Okay. Then does that symptom have to do with that organ? Oh, okay. Well, then why is that not working? And it just rabbit holed.
So
and that's how it grew.
And so is there a term that relates to kind of the path that you started going down or what?
So again, I did all this research and everything, and it just got bigger and bigger every day. And my passion just grew. And then the word kept spreading. And then people were now coming in going, I hear you understand about Graves' disease or Hashimoto's or whatever. And I would just start collecting information from these patients, which is really all it's all about. If you remind me, I'll tell you how the model that we're dealing with now stepped away from that. But so I would just take these questions or the answers that I got, and then I would build more questions with the next patient. And then eventually I found out what I was doing was looking into and researching and learning functional medicine.
Functional medicine.
Mm-hmm. Or some people call it integrative, which they are different. Functional medicine is underneath the umbrella of integrative medicine. Integrative medicine uses functional medicine and Chinese medicine and Western medicine.
Okay.
And chiropractors and integrative integrates all the modalities for the patient.
Okay, I have a question for you. Okay. So where, and I think you understand where I'm going with this. I'm trying to feel you out a little bit.
Sure.
Where do you draw the line between quote unquote alternative medicine and quote unquote pseudo medicine?
Okay. Well, define,
so first of all, let me ask you this. How do you feel about essential oils and Bach flowers?
Bach flowers?
Have you never heard of Bach flowers?
No.
That's probably a good sign that it's crap. Okay. Bach flowers, it's basically flower sweat. Have you heard of this? It's basically the dew from different flowers and stuff, which I don't know how to explain it, but it's pretty much flower sweat. And there's people that treat people with this stuff. And I don't know if it's a placebo effect or whatever, but there's people that swear.
I have a question for you. Do you know what grass sweat is?
Yeah, Bach flowers.
Dew,
right. Thank you for that, Chad.
Try some.
Okay, well, just the fact that she hasn't heard of that.
Not in the mountain form.
Yeah.
Not Mountain Dew.
Definitely check that out. But I just know that there are people, in fact, locally that who push this kind of stuff have had to go through like schooling and training to be able to.
Well,
you can get schooled
and trained in anything.
Exactly. So I'm trying to figure out where you draw that line between alternative, medical marijuana. To me, it's just black and white. It is 100% good because I've replaced every single type of medication I've been on my whole life with just medical marijuana moderately. And now I sleep good for the most part and everything else, except for the other issues. But I'm better than I was,
Yeah. No, but I wouldn't say I draw the line. Well, I guess I do. I mean, the products, the supplements that I carry in my store, I won't carry them unless I've done multiple research, gotten studies. I know exactly where in the body, where in the pathway it's going to work. And I want to see the proof that what I'm selling you is going to work.
Now, you are definitely a proponent of CBD, right?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Well, I mean, in medical marijuana, I wasn't. Back when you guys were in high school?
Sure. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I was totally against it.
In all fairness, weed sucked then. Like, honestly, whenever you would get the weed back then, it was crappy. It was just, it's from Mexico.
That makes
me feel better. It's brick weed. You don't know what was spreading
on it.
Yeah,
but the whole thing
now
was with that, it wasn't perceived as a
medical
it
treatment.
Wasn't accepted.
No.
I mean, there were groups of people that were going, oh, yeah, this stuff, it does this for me.
Well,
right.
Well, you're not
going to
get
thing,
medical benefits, though, from 6% THC and 0% CBD weed.
I mean, let's face it, most people, you know, 10 years ago, most folks are like, they're pulling on it just to get high, man.
Yeah.
So what if you are, man? If that cuts your mental health problems, which affect your physical problems,
it wasn't
I'm
broadly accepted as a medical option.
Sure, but there has been a large mass of people trying to legalize the stuff ever since the 60s. So,
yeah. Anyway,
now more than
half of the country or states in the United States have passed some form of marijuana legislation. I think last year it tipped the scales. I think there's 28 states now where medical marijuana is legal.
I am 100% proponent for it. I was not until about 6 years ago when some of my staff they were talking about it with a patient and I'm like, meh. And they kind of introduced me to the medical research behind it. And when I really dove into that, I was like, holy crap, there's medicinal properties in this. they're like, the one caveat with everybody getting a medical card or making everything medical or recreational, whatever, is that it can take care of some of those issues, mental health and stuff like that. But you also have to take into consideration genetic hiccups.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Everybody reacts differently to everything.
Well, but yeah. It's very common to get like
a panic attack.
Well,
and this is where dosing and stuff like that comes into play. This is stuff that we just don't have enough research on too.
That's a big one.
That's a what? Hold on. What's that again?
THC induced schizophrenia. If you have a genetic predisposition and it's usually dosing.
It's temporary schizophrenia though. You're not stuck like that. There's no possible way.
It depends on how long you do it, because they've actually shown frontal lobe changes.
With no other drugs involved though. It's kind of like people say that kratom is bad, but there's never been a kratom death where other drugs weren't associated with it. Like, that's another one. How do you feel about kratom?
I don't know enough to talk about kratom, really.
You definitely should, because that, like, I used
but
to be
But I do know that there is medical research on it, and I do know that it does work.
I know that it's a lot easier to get off of kratom than it is to get off of Subutex or Suboxone or everything else that opiate addicts have to go through legally. You know, in order to do things legally for your best benefit, it's almost impossible. Like, the last 10 years of my life, I've had to treat myself illegally,
right?
You know, just for what's best for me. And that means sacrificing jobs. That means sacrificing so much just so you can get through a day, dude. I'm just so thankful we are in the time we are in. We can save the recreational marijuana talk for another day. I don't support it. We can save that for another discussion. But
can you actually function without any medicine in your life? Period.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This, what I tell patients is,
define
go
medicine.
Back. First of all, the first thing I ask, if I'm going to sit down with a consult, I'm going to go, Drew, when was the last time? First of all, I'm going to take a huge history from you.
Okay.
And then we're going to sit down and we're going to talk. And I'm going to go, Drew, I need you to go back in your memory and tell me when the last time it was that you felt good.
Right. Fortunately, you're not actually asking me, because I've dealt with so much depression that I don't even remember anything before 22, 23. I don't remember anything, honestly.
So
I have no idea.
You remember 4-H Club, though, don't you?
I don't know, man. I'm telling you, dude. I literally can't remember anything before then. But anyways.
So, I mean, those are the kind of questions. It's because you want to take that person back to the last. Most people can go, I felt good before I got mono. And then from the day I got mono until 40 years later, I never have felt 100%.
I felt good until I got married for the first freaking time.
You're like an investigative journalist of pharmacy, though, because you really start asking questions. And
I want to know if you were a vaginal birth or you a C-section birth. Were you breastfed or were you bottle fed? Did you have any ear infections? Did you have? Did your mom take you to the doctor every time you turned around? Were you getting candy as a treat? These are the questions I'm asking, because it's shaping who you are at 50.
Okay, this is exactly what happened to me. So I find out a couple of years ago I have high cholesterol. I don't know what the percentage is of America who is 48 years old that has high cholesterol, but I'm going to venture to say it's a fairly high percentage. Mm-hmm. So let's just say 75% of 48-year-old male America has high cholesterol. Okay, and so did you call that a statin drug?
Yes.
Okay, it's almost a knee-jerk high cholesterol, statin drug.
Can I tell you something really quick?
Yeah.
The American Heart Association guidelines state that if your LDL is over a certain number, which isn't very high.
What's LDL?
That's your... what they call the bad cholesterol.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't use
that term anymore. Switches every decade? What's the bad cholesterol and what's
actually,
the good?
HDL is your good and always has been, and LDL is your bad.
What is the CDL?
That's to, so
that, that's a license so you can drive a semi-truck, Jeff.
Got it. Yeah, okay, just checking. Just testing.
Sure. All right. Just testing me.
Just so you know, that's not medical related. You do have to pass a medical exam to get a CDL, though.
And you have to get at least a C- on the drug test.
Yeah, man.
No, I think that was on the CDL.
Oh,
no matter how much I ever studied, I can never pass one of those things, man. I'm telling you.
Okay, go.
So the guidelines state that if you're over 40, if you have a family history of diabetes, if you're diabetic, if your LDL is a little bit over a certain range, and I think that's, I may be leaving one out. When you take, that means that every one of us literally, because we all have pre-diabetes. We all, you know, our group is over 40. Somebody in your family had diabetes or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We all have high LDL, mostly. So that means basically 90% of the population under 75, because the guidelines cut off at 75 and go, if you're over 75, you don't need one.
Everything's out the window if you're 75. You're just you're an anomaly in the first place, right? If you're 75.
Yeah.
And so really, honestly, that's why. That's to answer your question. And you're like, everybody has high cholesterol. No, that's the guidelines that says we all should be on it if you're over 40.
So I'm walking away from the doctor's office with this prescription, and I already have a problem with taking pills. And so this is the very first thing that comes out of my mouth. I'm supposed to take this stuff. I don't want to take any of this crap. And then you started telling me about the long-term effects of taking statin drugs.
And I did that so that you were an informed consumer. I never go against what a doctor has said. I always will say, you need
you
to talk to your doctor.
Were really clear about that.
You mean you consult with science before you make a decision?
Maybe. Sometimes.
You crazy individual.
Know,
how dare you?
I know.
So you're just laying science on me.
Yeah.
And it didn't take very long for me to go, well, if this is known to do this, and this does this, and this does this, and I can just eat less ice cream.
Right.
And do the same thing that a pill will do. Why would I take pills that will essentially cause me worse problems in the long run?
So there are some specific conditions where, for instance, since we're talking about statins, that the proof is there. There are some familial hypercholesterolemia that you can't do anything with diet or exercise. But it's rare. It's more common than it used to be, but there are specific, and I say this with all medications, there is a time and a place for medications. I am the pharmacist, when I go speak at conferences, I'm the pharmacist who's known that I hate pills. And so I'll give you your statin, but I'm going to ask you also, do you want to know how some information that might help you work with your doctor to eventually get off of it?
Yeah. And that's what I really appreciated about that dialogue. You were real quick to point out that, look, man, I'm not trying to go against your doctor, but you probably might benefit from knowing this. But that is just a small example of the, what did you call it? Functional medicine?
Yes.
Integrative medicine?
Functional medicine.
Your approach to that stuff. And so that's really why I wanted to talk to you in the first place. And so if I said, okay, folks who have never heard of this kind of thing, and really to this very moment have done nothing but go 100% with whatever the doc says as far as take this, that, and the other, what are your words to those people?
Well, first of all, I can discern. Praise God, I've got that. I'm learning how to get that gift of discernment, but I can discern when you walk in the door. Are you wanting the pills? Because if you are, I'll give you the pills because that's my job.
Yeah.
But if I can pick up on the fact that you're not happy about taking all the pills, then I'm going to ask you what you know about the condition, like I did with you.
Yeah.
And because most people, especially when they come in with a statin, they're leaving not getting the information that I think they need. Part of that is not, this is not the doctor's fault. Doctors are our friends.
Yeah.
So let me be clear.
Yeah.
Unless it's Dr. Fauci, he's here.
But this is going back to when I said, remind me of this. So the model of using insurance at a doctor's office or at a pharmacy is not very old.
Well,
that was in the late 60s and early 70s. And even then, unless you had a very good job, you didn't have insurance. Everything was cash. So doctors, practitioners at that time, pharmacists, we could fill less prescriptions, charge you cash, and make a good living. Doctors could see 15 people in a day because they're charging you cash, and they could make a good living. Then insurance came on board, and then all of us took our insurance to the doctor, because we won't go to you unless we have insurance, rightfully so, because it's expensive. But then we go to the doctor and we go, here's my insurance. I want to get out of here with a $10 or $20 copay. So then the doctor files your insurance. And on the backside, maybe 20 years ago, might have gotten $200 on the backside. You pay $20, insurance pays $220. That's a good revenue. Not anymore. Now, the insurance is like, I'll give you $50 on the backside, doc. You collect your $20. So now the doctor has to see 40 patients in an 8-hour period, which then reduces your time frame that you have with that doctor. And so the average in 2012, I believe, or maybe it was 2014, according to the American Journal, Family Practitioner Journal, the average length of time that you get in the doctor's office with him or her is 7.5 minutes.
That is absolutely astounding.
I believe it's increased to 12 minutes, but the average is, I think, 9.5 minutes before that doctor either interrupts you or gets a knock on the door. And the idea is that, you know, when the nurses come in and they take all your vitals and they figure out what your problem is and why you're here and everything. Mm-hmm. Remember when they used to stick it on the outside of the door?
Yeah.
And then the doctor stands out there and reads it?
Mm-hmm.
In the report, in the study, at their own admission, they said, we don't really hear what you say because I stood out in the hallway and I already know what I'm going to give you.
Man, good grief, man.
Can I just say that if you are looking at, you know, a new family doctor or something, so the first thing you do in 2020 is you go online and you start looking at reviews of different family doctors and stuff like that. The number one complaint. You look up any doctor, the number one complaint is they didn't listen to a single thing I said. They didn't ask me any of the questions. They don't feel heard. They don't feel like they even got
to
explain.
That's why patients come to me.
They don't even feel like they got to explain what's actually bothering them. And then they're ended up getting treated for something that they didn't like. This isn't my problem. Like, this is what I'm dealing with.
I don't need my prostate checked again. Why do you keep checking my?
That's a different like story.
My prostate. Why is that? I don't. Why do I need a second opinion?
7 minutes, by the way, that's long. I don't think I've ever had a doctor like where you're actually with the doctor. I don't think I've ever been with an actual doctor for longer than 7 minutes. And I understand their side, too, because they've got 20 million people pulling them in every direction.
And that's the reason.
Like, I watch Grey's Anatomy. I know how this works.
In order for that doctor to make the same amount of money that they made years before, when they saw 10 patients a day, they now have to see 40 and 50 patients a day. And when you divide 40 and 50 patients in an 8-hour time frame, and a lot of those doctors don't go to lunch, it's our fault as the patient who says, I don't want to value what you have to say, but I will pay you $20 and I need you to fix me in 7.5 minutes for $20.
Oh my gosh.
Therein is the perfect business model for big pharma.
What's exactly. What's even more sickening is that you look at the crisis that we have in America and over just the health industry in general, insurance, whatever you want to talk about, dude. Most of the profit, the money that these people make are largely, it's made up of elective procedures. It's not people who need help, who are desperately looking to help themselves. It's people who have stupid good insurance with supplemental plans that allows them to get boob jobs and lip fillers and freaking butthole
That's
tickles or whatever
is.
They need. That's where most of the money in the health industry is. And that is sickening. The fact that so many people have diabetes and they can't afford $1,500 a month with insurance to pay for their stinking. Sorry, I'm about to start cussing. I've almost finished my one beer. So my tolerance is, it's not there.
He's got it.
But what I'm getting at is, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Amigo.
The only thing that matters in this country is money.
That's
you can
right.
go to any major first world country any major country in the world, and you can go see a doctor for practically nothing.
So when that person is at the doctor's office and they're being told, well, you have your bad cholesterol is high and your good cholesterol is low. The ratio is kind of broad. And so we need to shrink that ratio. And so we're going to do it with this pill. Bang. What would be a good series of questions for that person who is not just okay with, oh, pop a pill and be done to ask?
Well, to Drew's statement earlier, what are you eating? Here's the deal with cholesterol specifically.
What should that patient ask the doctor?
What else? I don't want
to. He doesn't get a chance to speak in the first place, Chad. That's what we're talking about.
And again, like I said, it's our fault as patients pushing our insurance on them. That's shortening that time frame with the doctor. So their hands are basically tied. They're doing what they're trained to do, and so I couldn't. I guess I could. I'll answer that question with what I would ask.
Okay.
As a pharmacist.
All right.
In my practice, which is basically what I asked you.
Absolutely.
Because I know that when you left the doctor's office, I know that more than likely no one asked you, Chad, you need to stop eating all the fried chicken because that's why your cholesterol's up. But that's our mentality. Just as the average person thinks, my cholesterol's high, but how did that get high? Because I don't eat a lot of fried foods. And so for me, knowing that the average person doesn't know that, then I would ask you, Chad, what's your diet like? And then when you tell me, because I'm trained and I know the mechanism of how that developed and I know about cardiometabolic disease, I know that your high cholesterol is coming from sugar, which is completely opposite of what anybody, the average person would think, right?
Yeah,
100%.
What did you think when you were like, how did my cholesterol get high?
This is no joke, exactly my reaction. I rarely eat fried foods. That's the truth.
Did you say that?
Yes.
And the answer was? Or the dialogues went?
Between you and I?
Oh, no. I was going to say, did you say that to the doctor?
No. Okay. You're telling me this stuff. I remember this vividly. I go, How is my cholesterol even high? I don't understand this because I generally associate that with greasy and fried. And I go, I rarely eat fried food. And then she goes, well, how much sugar do you eat? Ice cream amount.
You eat all of the sugar.
I eat all the sugars.
Your blood is donuts.
My blood is ice cream. And as soon as we get done here, I'm going to go home. And I'm going to have some effing ice cream.
He's going to like it, too.
And I'm going to go, Suzanne, I hate your guts.
Yep. You won't feel one. No, you're not going to feel one bit shameful about it. I watched this guy pump 12 donuts down his throat every Friday. Tomorrow's donut day, by the way. I will give you photographic evidence of him.
I'd like it.
Just choking down them donuts.
What
makes him more mad about the donut is that there's not, it's not a full donut. There's a hole in it. He complains about the hole in donuts because he wants it to be there. So he also,
he also
grabs the donut holes, the bag of donut holes because he literally feels shortchanged by that missing center of donut. It's pathetic.
It's valid.
Look at his face right now. He is so angry.
That's my face right there.
So, sit and spin.
Listen, the hole in the donut, that is a donut hole.
Look at him.
We don't need to have this conversation.
He's
again.
Not worried about paying income taxes. He's worried about getting round, taxed that donut hole. Yep. That's what he's worried about.
The round thing, that is the cutout that leaves the freaking hole. You're about to get me cussing here.
See,
pisses
we can
me
talk
off.
About politics, religion, whatever. Not he's cool donuts. As a cucumber. You bring up the donuts, the dude gets serious.
Well, because people have, it is improperly named. It's a freaking ball, okay?
That's true.
It's round. It's a ball.
It's
okay?
not a donut hole.
No.
It's a donut ball.
The hole in the donut.
It's a donut absence.
That's the
ball.
Hole.
Dough balls and, you're
it's
right.
Like Jesus. Black isn't a color. It's just, it's the actually the lack of color or lack of
You're
something.
Right. Just like cold is the lack of heat.
Yep, right. Yep. See?
What is orange?
Orange is somewhere the on the rainbow black? Spectrum between red and green.
Yeah.
And yellow, I mean.
So that's exactly how that went. And so would you encourage a patient to ask the pharmacist?
Anybody that will listen.
Anybody that will listen? And then what are they looking for in a pharmacist that... I mean, it's not like you're going to go pharmacist shopping. I don't know of anybody that does that. Although I did that.
It's called polypharmacy.
I did exactly that when I found out, when I met you and found out exactly what you did. And then Shelley told me about all of the, all the stuff that you've studied since
pharmacy
you've
school.
Been a pharmacist, to me, is fascinating.
Well, you know, I've always kind of been that way. And so I've always told patients, now this is back when I was working retail. This is before I knew anything about functional medicine. As I would tell them, somebody's been on their thyroid medicine for 10 years. They come to my pharmacy. I'm at a big chain store. And I just very casually go, don't forget to take this on an empty stomach and don't take any multivitamins or Rolaids with it. And the patient stops and goes, I'm sorry, what? And I'm like, how long have you been on this medication? And they're like, 10 years. And I went, no one's ever told you that. Those are the things you need. I need to have a verbal statement with you as my patient every time I see you, even if it's, how are you doing? Even if it's, how are the kids? How are you feeling? Oh, hey, you know, you haven't gotten your refill on your statin. Mm-hmm. What did you do to get off of it? So it's.
I forgot. I quit eating ice cream for like 2 months.
That's a big deal. It's either.
That was a bad 2 months, by the way. That's your fault.
I'm telling you, you've saved me. You've saved me before because I've dealt with so much like back, just all kinds of stupid stuff. And I hate going to the doctor. I don't want that stuff. But she has saved me with her topicals. Your topicals are amazing.
They're kind of amazing.
Dude, you're the only person I know that does
that.
I've
heard
kind
about
of
your
stuff.
Topicals. I got to get into them sometime. some of the accolades that you've earned over the past, even the past few years, what are those? Really quickly, we don't have a whole lot of time
here. Oh, I don't mean to brag, but
no.
No. Seriously, though, more about me.
my biggest accomplishment is the Institute for Functional Medicine. It is there's two big players in functional medicine training and education, and I chose to do a certification path through IFM. When I graduated that 2 year course, I actually was the 7th pharmacist in the world to be certified through IFM.
Oh, that's a good number too.
So it was a good number. Now they're looking at several, you know, probably closer to 50 that are going to be going through the pathway and finishing out. But this is an organization that's got only 1,000 medical doctors certified. And I was number 7 of the pharmacists.
Wow.
So that was my biggest accomplishment. And then I'm certified in pharmacogenetics, and I'm certified in a couple of other things. I don't know.
I'm forklift certified, and that's about it. So I'm just quite impressed.
I used to have my CPR certification. I let
yeah,
that
it's
go,
gone,
man.
Brother. That's gone.
So you being the proponent that you are of this functional medicine, you being a fan of it before you even knew what it was called, mm-hmm. that you have this accolade also, that spoke volumes to me. And I wanted the world to know how impressed by you I have been, especially since knowing that stuff. But it sounds to me like you invite the questions from the patients.
I do, because you as the patient historically have been trained to just run in, pay your copay, and leave without talking.
Yeah.
And so I know that your trait as an average patient is you're not going to open up to me unless I ask you the questions. So I know the questions that I want you to answer. And then I'm going to drip a little bit of information to take your temperature to see, are you worth, I'm only legally obligated to counsel you in like a 30-second counsel if it's a new prescription under a certain insurance. Anything outside of that, I'm not legally obligated to discuss anything with you, really. So when you, going back to that question is how do you find that pharmacist? I've always said you need to find a pharmacist that's talking to you. Hmm. Because if you walk in and I know that you don't normally limp, I'm going to go, Chad, why are you limping? And then you're going to go, oh, I've got a bad hip. Did you have an injury, Chad? No, I think I've got some arthritis in there. Well, you know, that's about inflammation.
My wrist.
And then I'm going to start talking.
They're feeling better. Look.
You got acupuncture today, man. Oh, what
was
that?
I did get acupuncture, man. My forearm looked like Coolio. No, seriously, though.
But then I'm going to talk to you about inflammation. And then I'm going to be,
it's the source of all pain.
The whole conversation, yeah. I'm going to be gauging. If you're interacting with me, I'm going to keep giving you information.
It seems like it would be the reasonable thing. Okay. All right. It seems like it would be the reasonable thing from the patient's perspective, because I, the patient, am depending on this little pill to fix me up that otherwise untreated is going to is quantified that's as the silent killer.
That's the reason why I talked to him.
Because I should ask.
We are too complex to ever think that one pill, one diet, one food, one therapy, one plan is going to fix everything. We are not 22,787 symptoms. We are 7 biological systems. If I can spend enough time with you, I can take your 22,000 symptoms and I can categorize them into those 7 biological systems and go, there's dysfunction here. And that's the primary one. We got to fix that first before we fix this system.
Tell people where your pharmacy is at.
1602 West 3rd, Main, right across the street from Goodyear, catty-cornered from the hospital, east of Interbank.
What's it called?
Keys Compounding. Actually, we've kind of rebranded, and we're Keys Pharmacy and 180 Wellness.
You never want to sell yourself short?
Suzanne Keys, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you being on the jackass jack wagon.
The whack-ass jack.
The whack-ass jackhead.
Yeah,
the half-ass jack wagon, whatever. Anyway, thanks, Suzanne. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye then.
The Jack Wagon Podcast is a Courtesy Clap production.